I'd like to begin with a prediction. Sometime during this sermon, you will hear either a baby or a cell phone, or both, and immediately you'll think, okay, who's to blame? And then, depending, if something comes to me, I'll make a joke, and it'll dissipate, and we'll forget about blaming the person, but I want to go back to the moment that we do. Why do we blame? Why don't we just say, that happened? Usually, we blame ourselves for blaming. It's bad to blame. You shouldn't place blame. We live in a no-fault state. Nobody's to blame. But blaming actually comes from two very important and positive aspects of the human character. The first is the desire to know. When a little kid says, why? And you give an explanation, they go, why? And they keep saying why. They're doing it not only to annoy you, that's a side benefit. They're doing it because we wish to know deeply. It's part of the curiosity of the human mind and a blessing. And the second reason we blame is because if you can't find out why something happened, you can't fix it. And so the impulse to blame is not just this terrible, awful, oh, we want to make someone feel bad. It's because we need to know the origin of something, the etiology, where it goes back to, what caused it, what could make it better. Told you. I told you, and it's your fault, by the way. Thank you for raising your hand. When Joseph's brothers come to him, and they're terrified because they think he's going to blame them for selling him into slavery, what does he say? It's okay, it wasn't your fault. It was God's plan. Thereby taking the blame away from the brothers and placing it on God. And because he places it on God, we think, well, maybe it's not blame. Maybe it was a good thing. But I watched, as you did, over the past couple weeks, as the coverage of the shooting in Sandy Hook unfolded. And what I discovered, or what was confirmed, is that there are three levels of blame that people immediately go to, depending on the commentator. And sometimes all of them simultaneously. Everybody who contacted me said, we want you to explain whether God is to blame. So one order of explanation is the theological. What does God have to do with this? And then what people in my position often did was we did a backflip and we said, no, it's not God, it's society that's to blame. So society was the second level of explanation, and then, of course, there's the individual. And all three have very plausible scenarios under which they could be the primary person or entity or being of blame. Let's start with God. It's obviously God's fault. Because if God sets the world up in such a way that such a thing can happen, then how can you take the blame away from God? When Cain kills Abel, one of the rabbis in a brilliant midrash says it's like two gladiators in a Roman arena. When one kills the other, he looks up at the emperor and says, this is your fault. Because had the emperor not put them in the arena together, they would never have killed each other. And so Cain looks up at God and says, you're the one who put this hostility inside me. I didn't build myself. You place this brother next to me who irks me and irritates me. And you're the one who gave me the ability to kill him. So how dare you turn around and blame me? And certainly, that's an almost automatic reaction. How could God let this happen? So that's order one. The second, of course, is society. Society is easy to blame because in blaming everyone, you see you blame no one. So it's the proliferation of guns, or it's inadequate care for mental illness, or it's all the violence that other people, not us of course, but other people watch on television. All of these social explanations, and the truth is you can't escape them because societies do function differently, and there is much more gun violence here than other places, so you can't say, well, society has nothing to do with it. And when social changes happen, things change in the world. So society makes a lot of sense. What do you do if you're a parent raising a mentally ill child who is violent, but hasn't done anything terrible enough to get them institutionalized? How do you get help? There's no help. But then you come to the individual. Okay, there are a lot of people who have problems. Does that mean that you exonerate them for doing something horrendous like shooting up a school? Of course not. And if someone came to you and said, it wasn't my fault, it was society's fault, it was God's fault, you would say, you go to prison. Because we can't exempt the individual, and for that matter, we can't even exempt ourselves. Let's say you think that, in fact, the proliferation of guns is a real problem. Have you lobbied your congressman and senator? Do you belong to organizations? Do you give money? Do you do everything you could to oppose it? Of course not. All of us are inadequately active about things that we care about because, you know, life's busy and it's crowded and there's a lot on TV and there are things to do, and so we don't do as well as we could. We know that. So not only is the individual who did it to blame, we're to blame too. How often in the course of your life do you realize that there are things that you could have done, kindnesses you could have done for people, or unkindnesses that you did for people that you ought not to have done? And you realize that the individual level has a place to play as well. All of us fail, and we fail all the time. On the other hand, let's see if we can exonerate all three. It's true, God made a world in which people can do terrible things, but let's say God made a world in which nobody could do anything bad. What kind of world would that be? It would be a world without choices. If you can't make the choice to do something bad, then you actually can't make the choice to do something good either. You have to be able to hurt if you have the power to heal. And so one of the ways that people try to get God off the hook is, well, of course God made that kind of world, but Cain didn't have to kill Abel. The gladiator didn't have to become a gladiator. The person with the machine gun didn't have to walk into a school. And society? Yeah, society is not perfect, but no society is perfect. And every society is going to be a balance of positive things and negative things. And after all, sooner or later, society has to say, look, we do our best, but people have to make their own choices. And the individual? Does anyone know what kind of torture it is to grow up in a diseased mind and a violent mind? Can we really understand what it is that this kid went through and what he believed he was doing when he did what he did? We don't know. It's impossible to see the world with someone else's eyes. And so even though we may feel the obligation to blame him, the truth is we don't really know who he was or what he did or why he did what he did. So you can find cases both for blame and both for exoneration of virtually any level, individual, societal, divine. So where do we end up? In the Jewish tradition, where we end up with is the ultimate recognition that blame is less productive than a program for the future. That blame is helpful if it assigns causes, but of course, blame won't give you cures. And so, each level of explanation ought to yield a resolve to do better. For the individual, obviously we can't affect the individual who did this. But all of us, whatever our diagnosis about why it's bad, we can do better. We can do better in our own individual lives. We can be kinder, more sympathetic, more understanding, more open, more forgiving. And we can do better in our social lives, more active, have our voices heard more, care more, pay attention more. As a society, obviously we can do better. When something happens over and over and over again, virtually the same way, there must be a way in which we can do better. You will never eliminate violence, never have in history, and never will, but we can do better. And then we come to God. How do you ask God to do better? It seems as though you couldn't possibly do such a thing. And yet, what I would like to remind you is that you have spent all morning asking God to do better. Every time you pray and you say, God, do this, you're saying, you haven't done it yet, do better. I did a prayer for healing. What are we saying to God? These people are still sick. Do better. And even though it may seem as though we shouldn't ask that of God, the truth is we can't help but ask that of God. How can we not want God to do what we want of ourselves, which is to do better? The greatest anguish of life is that things cannot be undone. No sadder words of tongue or pen than these it might have been, as the poet said. And you know that for everyone who suffers a loss, especially the kind of loss that we have seen in the past week, do better is not healing. There is no perfect healing. There is a scar that lasts a lifetime that most of us, not all, but most of us, thank God, can only begin to imagine. But what is left to us? As individuals, as a society, as worshipers, what is left to us is the impulse to do better. It's the only thing that gives tragedy some little bit of meaning. When Joseph's brother stood before him, and he descended the stairs and said, I am Joseph, your brother. He did it because over the past weeks when he tested them, he saw that they did better. They weren't the same people who had sold him into slavery. They had changed. They had grown. They'd become better. That's why we read the story. And this week, and in fact every week, it speaks poignantly to what it is that we should do and what it is that the world needs. So, my prayer, as the secular new year comes close, is not that in next year everything will be perfect, but maybe we and the world will be a little better. Shabbat Shalom.